back to Observations. Our guest today is Roy Goodman, speaking from the land down under. We are now discussing many of the issues related to the spontaneous creation of life. We have talked about the fact that there simply was not enough time for the theory to be valid. We've also discussed the probabilities associated with creating even the simplest form of life, to the point where it is improbable to the point of being impossible. And now we're talking about, so if the improbable occurred, and it didn't, then what would the natural course of events yield over time, considering the concept of entropy and thermodynamics? And Roy, you were beginning to discuss how all things essentially evolve, but they devolve. They become they disintegrate. Now there are examples that we can name of things that have evolved forward. For example, man's weapons of war, from sticks and stones to bows and arrows and spears to guns to the weapons that we deploy today. Boy, we've certainly shown the ability to evolve our weaponry, haven't we?
We certainly have, but of course it takes intelligence to do that.
By the way, is arguable. about weapons, that's arguable. Okay.
Might be a bad analogy.
But look at locomotion. You know, we learned how to ride animals. And then we learned how to tow things behind animals with carts. And then somebody invented a steam engine, and then an internal combustion engine, and we had automobiles. And then someone figured out a way to put wings on it and take advantage of Bernoulli's theory, and we had airplanes. And boy, look how our airplanes have evolved.
That's right. But they all required intelligence to do that. There had to be a hands-on individual there who was actually directing the development.
Correct.
Everything that's being done in this industry is that. But, of course, it's all fighting against the laws of thermodynamics. So it still requires energy to do so.
Yes.
So if you left it to yourself, the guns would rust, the aircraft would not fly anymore, the cars would rust as well. Everything would essentially just disappear down.
So we could say that everything necessary to build a Boeing 747 is available here on Earth. And that a Boeing 747 is infinitely more simple in its design and in its componentry than is the human body. But that a Boeing 747, everything needed to build it is here on Earth. So if we'd only have enough avalanches and lightning strikes and tidal sway, that ultimately all of those elements would get together in the right order, in the right way, in the right place, and the result would be a Boeing 747. And that once it was there, it would find fuel, and it would find a pilot, and it would fly, and then it would evolve to even a more sophisticated airplane after that. Isn't that macro-evolution?
That's right. I mean, that's the kind of idiocy that macro-evolutionists come up with. That's exactly right. It's the whirlwind in the junkyard analogy, I think, that someone used.
Yeah, but even the whirlwind in the junkyard, the reason I didn't use it here, that's not a fair comparison, because the junkyard is filled with things that intelligent design has made.
That's true. That's true. And keep in mind also that the human body, we don't fully know understand the human body anyway. It's even more complex than we thought.
Yeah, our nervous system and our brains is something we have a very limited knowledge of, and even the internal cell biology. And, you know, we have been finally able to map DNA, but being able to map DNA and understanding DNA, vast chasms between those things.
Oh, yes. You could do a whole show just on DNA alone. Do you want to move on to microevolution, which seems to be the natural progression of things from here?
Sure. So, but just to finish the entropy, the fact is that if life was conceived, it would devolve. It would not progress upwards and becoming, gaining information, gaining status. It'd be like the Lloyd's or the Wright's flyer. Given time, would by natural processes become a B-1B bomber?
Yes, but I think what you're getting at here is that if someone of us, for example, devised life in some way,
yes,
that life that would work here on Earth in the current environment, mm-hmm, would that life continue on, let alone be right, able to increase genetically so that it would throw up higher organisms later, yeah, on down the track? The thing with entropy is that it does not allow that sort of thing to happen.
No.
Generally speaking, I put a caveat on that because I think that in fact the designer, namely Yah, did in fact put in a system so that it could happen, but that was a very subtle way, something that was done that we couldn't do. We could devise an animal, say a combination between a platypus and an echidna or something like that, and it works perfectly well in our environment. But the moment the environment changes and it goes and it becomes adverse to this organism, it has no ability to adapt. And the inability to adapt means that it cannot survive. So it would die and disappear.
Yes. Now, for example, gene mutations, which are the explained basis of evolutions, that we have evolved in our and right in our genetic code, we have gained information really, and superior arrangements of genes have developed more sophisticated, better adapted creatures. Isn't it true that 99.9% or maybe even a higher percentage than that of gene mutations are negative?
Absolutely. The thing that I think that I want to get at is that Yah himself knew these problems would occur.
Yes.
So what he did was he front-loaded the genetic material that he had, mm-hmm, so that microevolution, that is, if you like, an upward course, could occur. But you see, again, that's part of intelligence. It's almost as if he were there directing the show, mm-hmm, all the way along, but he doesn't need to be because of the way that he's manufactured the DNA to begin with. Mm-hmm. And there's an excellent explanation of that by Mike Jean in his book, The Design Matrix. If you haven't read that, it's certainly worth reading. I think that explains a lot of the problems that we have explaining evolution, because it's quite clear from the fossil record that life forms that were inferior to us, for example, the fossils that were found in the Canadian Rockies were clearly very, very primitive. And yet we've developed up to the point of humanoids, the ape-like creatures, which, mm-hmm, are far different from that. So there has to be an explanation as to how that came about. Mm-hmm. And I think the explanation is given very nicely by Mike Jean, which shows that even though that the laws of thermodynamics are working against, obviously, or apparently working against this kind of development, it can occur if you front-load it into the DNA so that as challenges come along in the environment, mm-hmm, you get minor variations that will enable not only the creature to survive, but to change very slightly so that it will also develop us at the end.
In other words, our DNA was given a flexibility and an ability to adapt to overcome challenges environmentally, and that right, was written into the DNA code. So while we look at DNA and we understand what tiny portions of it do, and we don't understand what much of it does, it's apparent that much of it is designed to enable us to cope.
That's right, but there's unfortunately a downside to that as well. If you're going to be doing the random shuffling of genes, it's going to be winners and losers.
Right.
This is, if you like, the cruel bit. Mm-hmm. There's going to be creatures that do not survive, even though they've done a gene shuffle. It's, again, statistics comes into this. If you can pick out the right genes that have been provided by the front-loading process, then you will survive. If you don't, then you will die out. So at the end of the day, we can in fact climb the ladder, but it's only because it's being front-loaded by an intelligent being. And that explains a lot of what we see in the fossil record. But there's another condition called punctuated equilibrium. Because evolution didn't give all these billions of what should have been intermediate stages that we could see as evidence in the rocks, and in fact Darwin was quite aware of that problem. Because that's not there, it would appear as if an organism has suddenly changed from one type to another, almost in the blink of an eye. And they call that punctuated equilibrium. Now that brings us to chaos theory.
By the way, can I just, before we get to chaos theory, when you talk about climbing the ladder, since 99.9% or more gene mutations are negative, counterproductive, what you're talking about is that there are various different types of sparrow bills or beaks based upon the environment that those sparrows live in, and that there are different adaptations among monkeys depending on the kind of trees that that proliferate their environment. That within certain species, there are adaptations to the environment, but when you're talking about the difference between a fish and an elephant, we're not talking about that kind of up the ladder. We're talking about very fine tuning of animals over long periods of time to cope with their environment.
Yes, you can fine tune. See, Mike Jean pointed out in his book that there are a number of enzymes that occur in single-celled bacteria organisms that are not required because they are used exclusively in multicellular organisms. Now, evolution, in fact, to make an enzyme is an energetic process. That means that the cell is at a disadvantage to do so. So to make that enzyme, that means it's more likely that the cell will not survive. So why put it in there in the first place? And if it was front-loaded into it, it's designed so that when conditions are appropriate, those genes can be expressed. That is to say, the cell joins together with other cells to make multicellular animals. Otherwise, you've got a problem. For example, why don't we see monkeys in the ancient rocks?
Why don't we see them?
We don't see them because they're not there. I don't think it's simply that we've just missed out on seeing them. I don't think they were ever there. I think that there has to be some explanation for what we do know to be true. And this is one of the reasons why so many people hold evolution to be true. It appears, at least on the face of it, that in fact we have climbed the ladder. But I'm saying that we've climbed the ladder because of intelligent front-loading or intelligent design, so that it's possible to do that. But there is a lot of wastage along the way, in that organisms that have these deleterious mutations will die out.
Yeah, and what we don't see is a paper trail of all of that. And if it was simply adaptation to one's environment and simple life forms continuously becoming more sophisticated, then the paper trail, the evidence of the fossil records, should be ubiquitous. But it's not.
That's right. That's right. And this is where chaos comes in. Chaos is a relatively recent theory that's been developed. We see chaos all around us. The weather is a classic example of it. The flow of water in a stream, the stock market, human behaviour, whatever. If you look closely, you can see chaos all around us. Now, one of the things about chaos is that, I'll give you an example of water flowing down a stream. You might be going over rapids and it's extremely rough. You can't really tell what's going on. There's water here, there's water everywhere, it's jumping up and down, it's going around in circles. Mm-hmm. And every so often, you'll find that there'll be a single place, somewhere in all of that, where it suddenly becomes still. And you can't explain why, it just simply becomes still. And then, as the parameters change again, that stillness disappears and continues on. So I suspect, and I can't prove this, but I suspect that chaos with these islands of stability, as they're called, in chaos, is what has enabled the evolutionary climb, if you like, up the ladder. That is to say that organisms can find themselves in a stable environment where they can, in fact, adapt and thrive. And then when the chaotic system again asserts itself and the environment becomes chaotic again, they will die out, with the exception of a few individuals who, by virtue of their gene shuffling, have managed to survive. Now, I know that that sounds a little bit tenuous and a bit of a dodgy theory, but I can't explain in any other way how we could have come about unless there was an intervention all the way along to produce the animals that we see. Even just recently, for example, in the tar pits of Abraia, for example, is it called Abraia?
Yeah.
You know, these creatures that have become extinct there.
Right.
Those, were they created or did they simply evolve from other animals? I know you can say that a lot of them would be variations on the theme, and indeed they probably were. But if you go back further, you don't even have to go back to the extinction of the dinosaurs. In fact, the dinosaurs themselves are a problem. I mean, where do they come from, and how could they have developed in any other way? Unless there's two explanations. One of them is they evolved with front-loaded evolution, or two, Yah created them as he went along.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the dinosaur, or the mighty lizard, which is what dinosaur means in Greek, mighty reptile, is a term that Yahweh specifically uses amongst the things that he said that he created. And then once he created these various things, he allowed them to evolve within their species. It seems to be the only rational explanation for what we are witnessing, particularly in the fossil record, is to, since we don't have intermediary species and we don't have hundreds of billions of failures, which would have been the result for every successful creature, you'd have to see the remnants of 100 times that number of failures. And we don't see them.
That's true, but if you had islands of stability in chaos, for example, you would have creatures that were almost identical. Most of them would then be wiped out. That's an extinction event.
Right. Now,
that's also an extinction event because of genetic deterioration. But in one or two of those one or two of those creatures, there may have been a mutation that was, in fact, beneficial. It may have even been pre-programmed. So then what you've done is you've gone from a large population of identical creatures which you can identify in the rocks, and a sudden jump to another kind of creature. Now, it wouldn't be necessarily a big jump because I don't think it would be biologically possible, but it would be a jump that would be sufficient to distinguish the two from one another. Otherwise, you come back to Yah being a hands-on creator.
Yes,
I don't think there's any other explanation that you can come up with.
No,
and I think Mike Jean's explanations in his book are very, very compelling.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have to leave this segment at this point. I want you and Scott to continue the segment, but. And I know you have a lot more to cover. One thing I make sure that you do cover in the time that's remaining is. This realization that you can use these same kinds of thought processes to go through the predictive testimony of Yahweh to determine whether or not he can be known and whether or not he can be trusted, and whether or not God designed the system that we are talking about in such a way that he wants us to think about it and try to understand it, because it's the same process by which we come to know and understand him.
Yes.
And I just want to apologize to everybody listening now, because there's a huge drop-off from Craig to me.
Okay, I'm sorry. We may have an Internet-related issue. Anybody, Scott, I do need to part at this point. Why don't you and Roy carry on?
We will.
My pleasure being with you. And we'll continue on another day, Roy.
Okay, we'll do it.
Okay. We'll talk to you next time, Craig.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Where do you want to go from here, Roy?
Well, after that one, that actually brought up some doubts in my mind as to the validity of what I've been saying.
Okay.
I don't know how much you know about biology. It might be best if I just simply read out what I've already done.
Yeah.
And
I have what you wrote right in front of me, so I can kind of follow along, and I'll chime in with you here.
Craig puts it much better than I do, but so I think I'll, since I'm only a beginner at this sort of thing, I'll just continue with what I've said. He said, the microevolution now is see, how would a designer design life with all the uncertainties that go with an unpredictable universe? And that's what we're just talking about. And not be on hand at all times to keep life going when it meets an insurmountable hurdle. Clearly, the ability to survive, prosper, and to adapt to adverse circumstances must be built into the design of life from the beginning. A species of animal or plant that could not adapt would not be able to reproduce and would simply die out. And the problem with that concept is, as Craig touched on, is that there is no paper trail. There isn't a series of animal type 1 going to animal type 2, going to animal type 3 in the system. So that has to be explained in some other way. I don't know whether you're familiar with the fossils that have been found in the Canadian Rockies. They were found at about the time of the Cambrian explosion. And they were very, very simple organisms. Now, we've got organisms that have changed over a period of time, going through the Devonian period, which is called the time of fishes, then on into the Carboniferous, which is when there was lots of trees and things around. Then we got into the Silurian and ended up with the Cretaceous period when the dinosaurs were, and then we got into the Mammalian period after that when the mammals appeared. So did Yah intervene each time to make a new type of species? It's possible. Are we told that? I don't know. I can't think of anything in Scripture that tells us that would be so. You might be able to help out there, or maybe one of the others might be able to.
Yeah, on that part, I don't really have anything to add to that. Larry would be the one that I think might have something to say there.
If he's listening and can ring in, that would be appreciated. Because my strength is more in science rather than in Scripture.
Well, let's stick to the science then. Let's continue on with the stuff that you had written.
Okay. Right, well, I'll continue. So immediately we have one of the design features for life, sexual reproduction. It is true that some organisms reproduce by parthenogenesis, that is, non-sexual reproduction, but the vast majority of living creatures use sex. The reason for this is to defeat the effects of quantum uncertainty and its handmaidens, chaos and thermodynamics. The genes Yah has provided can be shuffled, cut and rejoined as they are during sexual reproduction, so that out of all the individuals alive, some will have the ability to overcome an existential challenge taking those individuals into the future with a slightly different genetic makeup. In this sense, Dawkins was nearly right, but instead of a blind Mother Nature randomly doing the gene shuffling, the genes were initially set up by the Creator to allow just that survival mechanism to happen, which is what I've just been saying with Craig. Atheists such as Dawkins, of course, contend that there was no designer, that the natural laws of the universe would combine to cause evolution to go onwards and upwards to better things all by themselves, using only natural selection as the designer. His book, Climbing Mount Improbable, was premised on this description with the addition of eons of time. Mutations of the genetic code is at the root of the small changes proposed by Dawkins and others as the basis for microevolution. Now, microevolution follows on from, of course, macroevolution, and that is essentially once the genes have been created by Yah at the time of the Cambrian explosion, he just lets the system run, and we have microevolution, which changes organisms in adaptation to the environment. So it's a front-loaded, intelligent design. So those ideas I have dealt with in my paper, and I won't repeat them in detail here, save to say that despite the popular view that all mutations have a beneficial effect, it has been shown by Behe and Sanford and others that this is not so. Beneficial mutations are extremely rare and are beneficial not by improving the genome, but by a loss of information conferring a survival advantage. And a classic example of that is sickle cell anemia, in which there's a mutation in the DNA that causes an abnormal protein to form in the red blood cells in people, and it, they form into the shape of a sickle. Now, for reasons that I don't know, the malarial organism doesn't like that kind of cell. So these people are more or less immune to malaria. But the thing is that there's still an information loss when this happens. That is, the DNA has been degraded down through the thermodynamic curve. And so continuing on, however, there's an element of truth to Dawkins' ideas. We know just by looking around that species do change in response to the environment. We do know that natural selection occurs with the extinction of some species because of natural changes or the predations of mankind. So in addition to sexual reproduction, is there another way to design life so that it will adapt to changes in the environment, be self-sustaining and be self-reproducing? Mike Jean, in his book, The Design Matrix, proposed what I think is the remainder of the pieces of the puzzle as to how life can be created and at the same time evolve. His idea was that evolution was front-loaded into the genome when it was created, or at the Cambrian explosion, so that eventually all the forms of life we have today would occur without further intervention on the part of the creator. And this, again, is, I think, where the difficulties come in with what we're discussing. This front-loading is in addition to the gene shuffling of sexual reproduction and relies on the chemistry the creator chose to build into our ancestors' bodies so that genes that code for one biochemical pathway may have hidden in them code for other protein structures that would give a survival advantage to organisms that express them at the right time. Many examples of co-option, gene duplication, and other methods by which front-loading could be made to work you will find in Gene's book, which I recommended reading. As mentioned before, we live in an island of stability in a sea of chaos. This stability combined with the Nisama Yah has given us has allowed us to advance very quickly technologically. In past eons, these islands of stability and chaos would also have been present, but could not have been exploited as we have done. Nevertheless, a stable environment would have permitted the species to increase in numbers rapidly before most succumbed to a serious adverse event marking the return to chaos. Such an event could have been an extinction event based upon deterioration of the genome within the species. Sanford, in his book Genetic Entropy and the Mystery of the Genome, explains this very well. Within that species, a few individuals would have changed genetically so that they had the ability to survive and continue life as a slightly different species when the next island of stability came along. How would such a form of evolution show up in the rocks? It's more or less as we see it. There are no Darwinian intermediates, just a series of jumps in the fossil record, punctuated equilibrium if you prefer. Interestingly, from the above discussion, it is clear that if evolution was run again, the actual trajectory would be different, but the outcome would be the same. That is, the desired end product of humanoids would eventually occur, even though the creator himself could not a priori predict the path that evolution would take. Stepping back to look at the overall picture of Yah's creation, we see on Earth that form 4.5 billion years ago, it was bombarded by comets, and we're melting its crust until it cooled to support life 3.8 billion years ago. Then Yah created a genetic code that first produced archaebacteria, and over the next 3 billion years or so, it cleared the atmosphere to be the clear blue sky we see today, where the sun and the moon are clearly visible. Then over a period of about 5 million years from our point of view, or 2.6 minutes from Yah's point of view, Yah either modified the genetic code or made a new code at the Cambrian explosion, at which time all the phyla that now exists sprang into existence. From then on, life evolved in a somewhat pre-programmed manner until the time of Adam and Chava. From there, as they say, the rest is history.
We actually have Frank called in and is talking. He's here. Frank, can you hear us?
Hello, Frank.
Hi, Roy. How's it been?
Hello, Frank.
There, I got the mic for the big speaker out of the way. How you doing, Roy?
Frank, can you hear Roy, Frank?
I lost you. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm back now.
Yeah, there we go. And Roy, you got him?
Hi, Roy.
Yes, I've got you. How are you, Frank?
Good. Hey, enjoying every minute of the conversation.
Yeah, what did you think about that last segment?
Actually, I think I was letting Diane out of the car right at the moment, and I actually didn't hear the last that you said, so you better bring me up to speed fast.
Well, I think where there's a potential problem that really hasn't been satisfactorily addressed is that Yah has created the genome at the time of the, or modified the genome at the time of the Cambrian explosion. From then on, we need to know what's happened. it's quite clear from the fossils in the rocks that there isn't a series of intermediates. It would have to be an enormous series of intermediates to show that Darwinian evolution was right. Since that doesn't happen, then we can assume that something else must have happened, such as punctuated equilibrium, which is another version of it. Now, that could punctuated equilibrium in evolution could be explained in terms of chaos theory, but that's getting pretty complicated. The problem that I think that we do have is that, as Craig was saying, I mean, the monkeys will change from according to or adapt to their environment by changing their form, but they still remain monkeys. The problem is that we don't have monkeys in fossils in the rocks going back to the Cambrian times.
Right.
So that means that must mean then that the. Do I stop here?
Yeah, we'll stop here quick. Hold that thought right there, and we'll be right back.
Hang on. We'll let it go through the break.
Yep.